Hi, welcome to Navigating Developmental Delay Podcast. I'm Ms. Burr.
And I'm Dr. Hamilton.
We want to welcome you and encourage you to follow us on social media. You can find us on our Twitter platform at NavigatingDevel1, Instagram, all one word, Navigating Developmental Delay, and Facebook. We hope that you visit our social media sites. You can access them through our episode webpage or wherever you get your podcasts. Our website is also on there, navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com. Be sure to check out our tweets as we will tweet out articles that we refer to on our podcast, and the links can also be found in our episode webpage.
So we wanted to go over our medical disclaimer real briefly at the beginning of each episode. We want to stress that we are putting this information out there for informational purposes only. We want to stress that we are not giving anyone medical advice or occupational therapy advice. For medical advice, you should reach out to your children's pediatrician or family physician only. So our podcast and blog disclaimer, while we make every effort to broadcast correct information, we are still learning. One doctor and occupational therapist may have a different way of doing things from another. We welcome any comments, suggestions, or correction of errors. We take no money from advertisers at this time. By listening to this podcast or reading our blog, you agree not to use this podcast or blog as medical advice to treat any medical condition in either yourself or others, including but not limited to patients that you are treating. Consult your family physician or your own physician for any medical issues you may be having. This entire disclaimer also applies to any guests or contributors to the podcast or blog. Under no circumstances shall Navigating Developmental Delays podcast, any guests or contributors to the podcast, or blog, or any employees, associates, be responsible for damages arising from use of the podcast or blog. For a more detailed disclaimer, please visit our website at navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to an episode about pediatric vaccines. Erin, how are you doing?
I'm doing well today. I'm excited to hear about this topic. I think there's some information out there, but, we want to really talk about it as it relates to children and kind of how that impact will happen as we go on this next year. So I'm really excited to talk to you and hear your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions about vaccines on a daily basis. Sometimes, parents have questions about kids' vaccines, their own vaccines, and, for adult vaccine questions, I usually refer them to their own doctor. But, I think it's important to discuss how the adult vaccination scheme, how that plays into what happens for our kids and things like that, because I'm sure you've gotten questions about it. I get a lot of questions about it as well.
Absolutely. I think it's the probably number one topic that I have in my sessions with families, especially as more people are receiving the vaccine. So I guess, what we should do just to start off is maybe just talk about the vaccines in general before we really get into what it's going to look like for kids.
Sure. So, there are three different types of vaccines that are available in the U.S. and there are different types of vaccines. So we'll talk about the Pfizer vaccine first. So the Pfizer vaccine is it's a type of vaccine called an mRNA vaccine. It's indicated for individuals 16 years and older. It's given in two doses, usually 21 days apart, and it's 95% effective against symptomatic disease. So we'll get to, talking about symptomatic disease a little bit at the end, but it does seem to be a very good vaccine. It protects against serious illness with the COVID-19. So the Pfizer one is the one that you've probably heard, Erin, is the one that needs a very, very cold temperature storage. And that limits its use a little bit because people have to store it in, very specific conditions. So for a lot of rural areas, for example, a lot of smaller hospitals, they may not have the ability to store this.
Oh, okay. I see.
And I'm having an echo. Do you feel an echo?
No, I do hear my children in the background though. So if anyone is listening and hearing some yelling, that may be my son.
Okay. If you need to attend to anything, let me know. So the second vaccine is the Moderna vaccine.
And the Moderna vaccine is also an mRNA vaccine like the Pfizer. It's indicated for individuals 18 years or older. So it's given in two doses. Now, this is the important part. The Moderna should be given 28 days apart, and it's 94.5% effective against symptomatic disease. So sometimes when you get a vaccine, if you get it at a health center, one of those community drives, sometimes I've noticed that people have been giving all the vaccines, Moderna and Pfizer, 21 days apart. So make sure when they schedule you for it that if you get the Moderna, that has to be 28 days apart. What's happening some places is the vaccine is either in shortage or it's arriving late. So they are able to give it to you a little bit later, but follow the package insert. Sometimes, it can be given a little bit later, but you have to make sure you're following the guidelines kind of listed there. Sometimes people that might be scheduling it might be treating the two vaccines as interchangeable. They're not.
So, what you're saying for part of that is you couldn't go and get, or you shouldn't go and get, the Pfizer for your first shot and then Moderna as your second shot.
No. So people, it's recommended that you get the same vaccine. It's not recommended to do different types of vaccines because all the studies that have been done on, the effectiveness of the vaccine and how they work has been done with the same type of vaccine. So they haven't studied, for example, Pfizer and then Moderna. And also, one of the things that we do know is that the Moderna vaccine has a different amount of mRNA than the Pfizer vaccine. So you really are comparing apples to oranges, so you have to stay with the same type of vaccine. And the other caveat, anyone who received a monoclonal antibodies or convalescent plasma, they should delay vaccine for at least, 90 days from the time of treatment. And there's some emerging data that people that have, so COVID infection, if you have COVID infection, your vaccine will be delayed a little bit, but this guidance keeps changing. There's some limited guidance, or there's some information coming out that people with long haul COVID, some of them might benefit from the vaccine, but it's still being studied. So there's no definitive guidance on that quite yet. So the mRNA vaccines, when there are, like, for example, delays, the second dose can be scheduled up to 6 weeks after the first dose. But really, like we said, recommend sticking with like the same vaccine. Don't recommend switching from Pfizer to Moderna. But one thing I should point out is these two vaccines were largely developed before the variants were widespread. So, they're looking at whether they would be as effective against the variants or not. And, there were some announcements that maybe they might give a booster shot to anyone who got the Pfizer or the Moderna to protect against the variants. But, the companies have suggested that people already vaccinated may receive a booster that covers the variants. So that is, the Pfizer and the Moderna vaccines.
Okay, so certainly some information that kind of keep your eye out if you did receive one of those vaccines, if down the line you're going to end up getting a booster shot as well.
Yes, quite possible.
Okay.
So, yep, go ahead.
I was just wondering about the booster shot. I have read that it might be even more indicated for individuals who are over a certain age, as they're a little bit more susceptible to illness. Is that something you've heard?
So, are you asking about the COVID booster, or are you asking like about the just the second booster shot or the variant booster that we think might be on the horizon eventually?
I think when I was reading about this, it was just a booster in general.
Yeah, so we know that the first dose of the vaccine confers some protection, but really the numbers, like, the 95, the 94.5% effectiveness, that's based on two shots. That's not based on one shot. So I know there was some discussion initially about should everyone just get one dose, but really for people that are at higher risk, they need to get the two doses. I don't recommend anyone stop the vaccine process halfway.
Great. Now, what about the new vaccine that has been approved in the United States, the J&J vaccine?
So the J&J vaccine, it's a different type of vaccine. It's not the mRNA vaccine. And it's also indicated for individuals age 18 or older, like the Moderna. It's given in as one dose, and it's an adenovirus type vaccine. So how it works is this uses an adenovirus, like adenovirus is the type of virus that causes, the common cold, it uses that type of virus to teach our bodies how to identify and fight the coronavirus. It doesn't cause you to get COVID-19. So their effectiveness, their efficacy was 66% at preventing symptomatic disease and 85% at preventing severe disease. But this is the important part. It was 100% effective against hospitalization and death.
Oh, wow.
Because sometimes I hear people saying, you know, the other vaccines are more effective, I should get those. But really, this one, the J&J, was 100% effective against hospitalization and death. And the other thing that I think it's important to note is, I think the overall effectiveness of the vaccine does seem to drop with variants, but so the J&J vaccine, it was 72% effective in U.S. trials, but it has decreased efficacy in about 66% in Latin American trials that involve the variant that's dominating the Brazil, Brazil area, and slightly less effective, about 57% effective in South Africa, where the B1351 variant has taken hold. Even so, it still provides, you know, protection against hospitalization and death. So my recommendation to people is, if you are eligible for a vaccine, you can get it, get whichever one you can get.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that, you know, things change. Sometimes with, you know, spring break going on right now, other things, we're going to see surges. If you currently have access to get a vaccine, please get
it. Yeah, I think that's great advice, because certainly when you just look at one number, it's very deceiving. And so I think, you know, you kind of question, well, should I wait? Should I wait to get a certain vaccine, or, you know, should I take a little bit longer about this process? But, you know, when you really look at the hospitalizations and death, you know, those statistics are great. And so that's what we're, you know, really looking at and trying to prevent. So I think that's great advice.
Right. And I'll just address this. You know, some people will say things like, you know, I don't want to get the mRNA vaccine because it changes my DNA. We know that doesn't happen, but we're not going to spend a lot of time addressing it in the podcast. There's really good information addressing this, you know, on, you know, the news, social media, a variety of platforms. But I have heard some people that didn't feel comfortable with the mRNA vaccine say, hey, I'll get the adenovirus one, I'll get the J&J one. The adenovirus, like the mRNA vaccine, you know, you are injected with mRNA, it causes your body to make like a protein that the mRNA encodes, and then that causes the, you know, immune response in your body, and that's how you become immune to it. So it doesn't incorporate in your DNA, but we won't get into that, Kelly, because that's like a whole long other discussion.
Sure.
But there's a lot of really good information, studies that show how this is not something that, you know, happens, but it's something that people have concerns about. So I would just say, whatever vaccine you feel comfortable with, please get a vaccine when you're eligible for one.
That's great. Yeah. And, you know, I'm just going to throw this question out there to you, because I'm wondering, as we're talking, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about side effects of the vaccines. And I think it's been great discussion of just letting people be realistic and knowing that you are going to have some side effects when you get the vaccine, you know, such as fever and aches and things like that. And I haven't read as much about the J&J. Are they still saying that you're still going to have the same type of side effects, and to kind of prepare yourself for that when you get the J&J vaccine?
So I think people are having side effects with the J&J vaccine as well. I think one of the reasons we're seeing more side effects with the Pfizer and Moderna is because you get a second shot. And with the first shot, the side effects are not that severe. The second shot, your immune system has already seen, they've already been exposed to that virus. So you have a more robust response with the second shot. And with the J&J, it's not a fair comparison because you're only getting one shot. So your immune system doesn't have a second go at it. So
that's a great point.
So there are side effects, but I think that the reason the COVID and Moderna second shot is more side effects is because it's the second time your body is being exposed to that, you know, that viral mRNA.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But I think also, you know, we know that people that are older will have less robust response. So if you're a younger person getting the vaccine, you expect to have a stronger reaction.
Oh,
so people that are over 60, 65, they probably will not get as sick. And that doesn't mean the the vaccine is not working. It just means that, you know, you're, so we know that immune systems change as we grow older. So we know that immune systems will not mount the same kind of response if you're in your 30s or 20s as opposed to in your 60s.
Wow. Okay. That's great advice and information. So that when, you know, my parents come to me and say that they didn't feel it as much, or I don't have to worry that, you know, it's not effective. Right. So I think that's a great right. thing to point out.
Right.
I was wondering, as we're talking about the vaccines, about individuals who are pregnant, if any studies have come out or if there's been discussion on that and if it's safe for pregnant individuals. Mm-hmm.
And this is a question I get almost daily, because anyone who is pregnant or breastfeeding, you know, they have questions about this. So one of the things that, you know, I think people have been very transparent about, and, you know, I'm going to, you know, tell you people very honestly, is
long-term data on the vaccines is not available yet.
Currently, they're being given under emergency authorization and not going through the usual way, you know, vaccines are tested and, you know, the efficacy and safety are established. But most physicians, like gynecologists, obstetricians, most of them do feel this is a safe vaccine to give when pregnant and breastfeeding, but people have to discuss their individual risks with their own doctors. So this is not something, you know, that anyone can tell you it's safe. You need to discuss it with your doctor and see what the two of you guys decide. So it's really individual discussion between okay. your doctor and yourself, because it's not something that, you know, we don't have a lot of long-term data. And I've had people ask me that question, well, what's the long-term data? There is none.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that weighing the risks and benefits, and we talked about this before, like getting the vaccine versus not, you have to weigh, you know, your comfort level and discuss with your own provider what you feel most comfortable with. So I think that's, you know, something that, you know, we have seen a lot of pregnant and breastfeeding individuals getting vaccinated, especially people that work in healthcare, you know, okay. because they have a higher risk of exposure. But that's something that you have to talk to your individual physician and discuss with them what the two of you think is the best thing for you.
Sure. Yeah. And I think that's, you know, great advice, going back to weighing your risk and the idea of, you know, we don't have long-term studies. We can't, you know, yet on any right. of these things. And so going back to some of the initial lists where you're talking about, do you have, you know, compromised individuals in your home, or, you know, do you have a diagnosis that would make you more susceptible to COVID? I think, you know, always looking at those lists and like you're saying, weighing the benefits and the risks of these things is important for everybody.
Right. You know, one of the things we should talk about is the variants, because one of the things that, you know, happens that doesn't happen in a vacuum is, you know, the more people are in contact with other people without precautions, which, you know, people feel tired, right? It's been a year. People feel tired of following, you know, the rules that we have in place. But the reality is that, you know, variants, you know, there's a lot of common variants currently in circulation. And as viruses replicate and spread, they mutate. So if there's a lot of replication and transmission, you will get a much higher chance of variants. And as people start to relax some of the rules in terms of, like, you know, personal protective equipment and things like that, and social distancing, we are going to continue to see more variants. You know, there's a lot of them. So there's like the B.1.1.7 identified in the UK in late 2020. There's the B.1.351, you know, identified in South Africa in late 2020. I mean, there is the California variant, which is the B.1.4.2.7 or the B.1.4.2.9 or the CAL.20C that is now becoming the predominant strain in California. And then there's the B.1.5.2.6 identified in New York. There's also the P1, the variant identified first in Brazil. So
yeah,
there are ongoing questions about how effective the current vaccines are against the variants, and that likely, you know, it's likely people already vaccinated will require a booster that covers the variants better. It's very possible, but I just think it's important that the end is in sight. We can't relax our rules completely right now, because then we're just going to be playing catch up. We're never going to get ahead of this.
Right. Right. Yeah, it feels like we're so close, but certainly these variants throw a whole new piece to this puzzle. And so I definitely hear, that we have to stay cautious and keep going if we want to be successful. Hopefully, do you think by the summer or the fall, if we are cautious and follow these guidelines, do you think that, maybe we could get back to school or get back to some things that, we look forward to?
I'm cautiously optimistic, but I receive notifications from my kids' schools, and I just got notification today that their schools are closed because there's too many COVID cases. So I think that, it's still around, and as people relax some of their, usual guidance in terms of social distancing because they feel more confident. And we'll talk about, questions that people ask in a little bit, but I think that we still see these surges. These surges will continue, and I understand psychologically everyone is kind of, over it, but even if you're over it, the virus didn't go away. It's still here.
If only it was that simple. I'm done with you now. Go.
No, exactly.
Oh, goodness. Well, let's talk a little bit about specifically for children. Now, when do you think that, well, I guess I should ask first, you did mention Pfizer is approved for some children at a certain age.
Yes, so the only approved vaccine for kids right now is the Pfizer vaccine. You can get it if you're 16 years or older. And, we haven't started doing, widespread vaccination of kids at 16. Hopefully, as we have a surplus of doses, that will start to happen. So there are a lot of studies underway. There's studies underway in kids 12 and older, but there's no studies currently in younger kids, but they're being planned, studies are planned in younger kids. So the reason they're doing older kids first is I think they have a potential to have more severe disease. But, generally, I think most vaccines delivered by private offices, to kids, so there are not enough doses right now, even though Pfizer is approved for 16 and older, most private offices aren't giving it yet at the pediatric, locations. So the Pfizer vaccine also, remember, requires very specific temperatures for storage. So that will likely, not be, commonly found. Those specific requirements for storage will be hard to find in pediatric offices. But Moderna and Janssen have like the Johnson and Johnson have easier storage requirements. So time will tell which one we give kids. But even though it's approved, we're not officially giving it right now at most offices. But there's also with scarce healthcare resources, there's also the ethics of this, right? So like who gets the vaccine? And we'll talk more about can you still give other people COVID if you have the vaccine? And the thing to be cautious about is, we don't we the variants are the wild card here. We don't know if you're still going to spread it or not. And we'll dive more into it, but as of right now, most pediatric offices aren't giving it right now. I'm hoping that's going to change soon.
Okay, interesting. Just a question of, is there a reason there's a cutoff age of 12 when they look at studies? Or, as you said, is it just because of the severity of illness, for this vaccine that it tends to be for older children?
So I think that we know that kids that were, 11 and older were spreading the vaccine kind of like adults. So I think that they're using that as a cutoff, and it might have something to do with the fact that maybe, kids that are really young can't give some level of informed consent. And kids that are a little bit older perhaps can weigh the risks and benefits a little bit better. But for most pediatric vaccines, you're always going to give it to slightly older population first, and then you're going to go to the younger population just because, I think there's a question of informed consent, and also you don't know how they're going to react to it. They're not going to be able to verbalize their side effects to you.
So you had mentioned, that they are starting some trials with children. What does that look like? I mean, what if a, if a parent was interested in a trial, what could they expect?
So, I get a lot of questions about when, kids will be able to get the vaccine. So, I think that it's being given in a little different way in terms of the trials. So people who sign up for, so the phase one, people who sign up for the trials for their kids, they will receive the vaccine, and then the researchers will study the effectiveness and the side effects of the vaccine. So in the initial trial that's going on right now, they're testing different doses of the vaccine. So the Pfizer trials for, kids that are age 12 to 15 is fully enrolled. And I think Moderna is still enrolling its 12 to 17 trial. And then studies for kids under 12 for both of these vaccines are expected to begin very soon. Likely the studies will take about 3 to 4 months to fully enroll participants, and then they will require at least a couple of months of follow-up to have sufficient data for review by the FDA. But they're testing, a higher dose and a lower dose to see which one is going to be most effective. And they want to have a good balance between, effectiveness versus side effect profile. So once they establish the optimal dosage in kids that are older, then they're going to start, I think, testing in younger kids. But we're looking at realistically at least a year or more before vaccines approved for kids. And I think likely, that approval will continue to involve progressively younger groups of kids. So after the 12 and older trials, they'll probably go to 6 to 12, then 2 to 6, and then 6 months to 2 years. But Moderna reported that their vaccine wouldn't be available for young kids until 2022. So there are, there are still a lot. There's still a lot of time that it's difficult for households because people might be vaccinated, but their kids might not be. And there's kids that should be prioritized, and kids who might have precautions in terms of when the vaccine is available. Like kids with pre-existing conditions like Down syndrome, heart disease, that put them at higher risk should in theory be prioritized, and kids with higher BMI are at higher risk as well,
I think, I've been getting this question more and more as things have been opening up, and a lot of the children I work with have pre-existing conditions, or they're just medically fragile. And I think, parents and the adults in their home want to know how cautious do they have to be now that they've been vaccinated? Can they open up their lives a little bit more? What do you think about that?
I think that's a question that's impossible to answer 100%, but I am someone who's a cautious person. So I think that if you have a medically fragile child and you got vaccinated, I think that you should still be cautious and take the same precautions. The main reason is you may not be with the vaccine, and if you're fully vaccinated, you may not be symptomatic or get severe illness, but there's still a chance you could pass it on to other people. So, if you get vaccinated and go into large gatherings, like without a mask on, is there a chance that you can get a mild asymptomatic infection and pass it on? It's possible, but studies will tell us more information in the future. But until then, I think we have to be careful because, people talk about, I know you had asked me earlier, when can vaccinated patients, they socialize socially, right? Like, have you been getting that question a lot?
Absolutely. I think everybody's wondering, wants to push those limits and really get out there again.
And I think it's a hard thing to answer because if you, let's say, if you're meeting with your friends and you are fully vaccinated, your friends are really fully vaccinated, the kids aren't though, right? So if the kids are in school or daycare, and yes, maybe there's less chance that you can spread it to your kids, but certainly, these kids can spread it to each other. Your friends' kids can spread it to your kids. And if you are no longer wearing a mask or feeling like, hey, I'm vaccinated, I can take my mask off, you could get a very mild infection and spread it to your kids who are not vaccinated. And you may not have a lot of symptoms if you're vaccinated, by definition, but your kids could.
So what I'm hearing from you is that there's still not enough research out there to really know if you're vaccinated, if you're going to pass an infection on. So as of this point, we need to be safe and still take those precautions.
Yes, and I think people in healthcare fully realize that people are you know, have been doing this for a year and they're feeling tired, but you know, just the end is in sight. We just have to go a little bit longer, but I'm concerned that, you know, when some people are opening up to full capacity, you know, it's when there's no longer things like mask mandates and there's a lot of domestic travel, you know, this situation where we're almost getting, you know, caught up with the virus, that might change within a few weeks. So it's a very fluid situation and we have to be cautious of that and handle it accordingly.
Right. So you just mentioned travel there. And as you said, you know, I think some states are opening up and, you know, some parents are certainly wanting to take a break, get out of the home. What would you recommend for travel? Is there precautions you recommend to your families if they are going to go?
Yeah, so travel, you know, is, I think travel is something people miss the most, you know, about the pandemic, along with, you know, the hardships people have faced and, you know, the devastating effect of having family members affected by the disease. I think when you look at travel, one of the things that I would recommend is I would buy, so we have a lot more PPE available than when we first started talking about COVID way back last year. So I think that KN95 masks, people are able to find them or something similar. I think when you travel, I would definitely, you know, remind people to keep their mask on as much as they possibly can. And especially in the airplane, like, I don't, depends on how long people's flights are, but, you know, I think removing your mask to have snack or drink with the person right next to you, I think it's like, it makes me a little uneasy. So if I traveled, I would keep my mask on the whole time. And I would, you know, just caution people, like have a discussion with your kids when they go to the bathroom, please tell them, do not take your mask off in the bathroom. It's enclosed spaces, like, you know, airplane bathrooms and very enclosed spaces, you know, tons of people are using the bathroom one after another. Please urge your kids when they go to public restrooms, you know, do not take your mask off in the restroom. It's important to keep it on and try to maybe get a higher quality mask.
That's good advice. I was just thinking and wondering about travel, and I'm thinking about my vaccine card that I have, and you know, I know that's going to become a topic and an issue. Do you have any just suggestions or things that you have seen out there so far to kind of, I mean, do you laminate your card or like anything that you've noticed that you thought was a pretty neat idea to kind of keep that with you?
Well, I know there's currently, you know, people working on how the vaccine, how being vaccinated will change, how things change for travel. As of right now, even if you're vaccinated, it's a state by state situation. Like some states require you to have a rapid test within 72 hours, or not a rapid test, I mean, a rapid result coming back within 72 hours of travel, which, you know, I think is not as accurate a measure as actually if you're vaccinated, because if you get swabbed before you get on the plane, someone on the plane exposes you. I don't think that 72-hour test is really as effective as saying, hey, here's my vaccine card, I received two doses. I think that's actually a better measure, but I think that people, every state has their own rule, every airline has different rules, so it's like a minefield kind of navigating what changed. So I think that, you know, seeing if you can you know, look at your individual requirements, but I would definitely, you know, take a picture of your vaccine card also, because you don't want to lose that piece of information. If you're able to get an electronic, you know, EMR kind of printout from your doctor's office, get that as well. That's a great idea. Because the vaccine card, yes, it's great to have, but if they can give you a printout saying this doctor's office gave you this vaccine, just the immunization record, I would definitely get that as well. And when we start doing it for kids, I think people are probably going to be starting to carry that. And you should just take a picture with your phone if you can, then at least you have a record of it if you lose it.
Right, yeah. little nervous about that. So I've certainly taken a picture.
Yeah, absolutely. But I was going to say, we were talking about the vaccine. So I just wanted to say in phase one, people are actually getting the vaccine, But remember, for kids trials in phase two, it's going to be placebo versus the vaccine. So if you sign up for a clinical trial, it doesn't mean you're always going to get the vaccine. It depends on what stage the trial is in, what phase the trial is in. So I would ask, because sometimes you may get placebo and not the vaccine in later stages. Right now it's phase one. So everyone is actually getting the vaccine, but I would keep that in mind.
No, that's a great point. And are they testing children mostly in big cities? How accessible are these trials?
So it's usually in bigger cities. We're actually not seeing a lot of expansion in smaller areas. But I'm hoping, once the data comes out, maybe they'll expand it to other areas as well. But I think a lot of it is limited by the vaccine storage requirement, especially for Pfizer. Sure. So I think for the other ones, it may not be that bad. But I think it's really dependent on, the vaccine storage. And my main take home, Erin, is I know we're all anxious to get this done. And I know it feels like forever, and I think we're all burnt out, but I think it's really, really important that we still take some precautions until we have more information. The guidelines will change. We just have to get ahead of this. We're not ahead of this yet.
Wow, Dr. Hamilton, thank you so much for all this information. I know it changes day to day, and so it's not an easy podcast to do because you have to always stay up to date. But I appreciate you sharing all this information with our families.
Thank you. It's an important topic to talk about, and everything we talked about is probably outdated by tomorrow. But I think that, that won't change the fact that I do think it's important for people to get vaccinated if they have, get whatever vaccine you feel comfortable with. If you feel comfortable with one, not the other one, get whichever one you feel most at ease with. But I think it's important to honestly talk to kids, because I think when we look at a lot of kids have a lot of anxiety about going back to school. When I talk to kids, and I'm sure you talk to kids, some of them are anxious to go back. Some of them are like, I never want to go back. It's not safe. So I think having an honest conversations, because, kids will ask like, well, my mom and dad are vaccinated. Now, can I stop wearing a mask? And then I think as a parent, having an ongoing conversation about these are the risks, these are the benefits, this is why we decided this, so they can feel like, they're part of this conversation. So kids feel powerless right now. So including them helps them feel like they have maybe some semblance of input in this.
Yeah, no, that's great advice. And I know we certainly, in our family have talked about, why I made the choice to be vaccinated. And I like that idea of, letting them hear these ideas out loud so that they have some buy-in to what you're doing. So that's great.
Yeah.
Wow.
Did your kids have a take on vaccines for themselves?
Well, my older son is ready, and he's ready to go back to school and wants to do what he can. My younger son, I will tell you, maybe you can give me a tip, is deathly afraid of shots. And so it usually requires me pinning him down and him screaming and the whole office wondering what I'm doing to torture the poor child.
Right.
So we will see. He is one where he's already worried about, getting the vaccine in 2022.
I find that bribery works well for me in terms of getting my kids vaccinated. So, sometimes for the ones that are really afraid, if you let them pick out something that they can open right after, a very high value item that might be beneficial. But I think for some kids, that's just a fear, and it's hard. It's hard when they are afraid of something and have to get vaccinated. But when some of my kids were younger, I would just tell them they're cleaning your arm, and then, it would happen so quickly they wouldn't realize it. But as they get older, you can't get away with that anymore.
I would recommend to any family to just have a real honest conversation with your provider and just warn them that they should maybe cover their ears. And it maybe provides some incentive and some thank yous to your providers.
Right. And I think maybe just writing a note to your provider and handing it to them and say, maybe don't mention it till the end. That's because great, you know your child best. So if you feel like that's going to bring on, you know, they won't be able to complete the visit because they're so afraid of the vaccine, then maybe kind of holding it for the end or a discussion for the end, that might be, you know, ways to modulate that when the vaccines hopefully are available.
I like that. I will have to try that for sure. That's a great idea. Wow. Yeah. Well, this was so much today. I really appreciate you taking all this time to put this all together. I'm sure we'll have some more conversations about it and another podcast when, you know, we get a little bit closer and it starts to open up the availability for children. And I know we have some really great podcasts coming up in the future. So I definitely encourage everyone to keep your eyes and ears out. You know, make sure to subscribe to our podcast and don't forget to follow us on our website, which is navigatingdevelopmentaldelays.com.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for talking today, Erin, and I look forward
Sounds
to our
great.
Next
Thank
podcast.
You so much too. Thanks everybody. Have a great day.
Thank you.